funny side note. This was early on in our time in Japan, and we went to the convenience store there in the expo, trying to find something for the baby, just like a quick snack, and made a beeline for the baby food pouches, you know, like the little applesauce or fruits and vegetable pouches. Quickly grabbed the first one we saw and fed it to the baby, and he loved it. It was great. And only a couple of days later, we were in a different convenience store, started looking closely at the pouches again, and realized the section that we got the baby food from was all the other pouches around those said energy or caffeine. And we found out that we inadvertently gave the baby an energy pouch. So...
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we welcome back Brennan. I think you were our first guest way, way back in episode 2 or 3, right?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you back.
Oh, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. And so a lot has changed since we've last talked to you. I think you had a child, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. Stopped traveling full time, had a kid. Yeah, a lot of changes.
Well, congratulations on that. And the reason actually we wanted to have you on is because you're traveling with your kid, and we all happen to go to the same destination within like only what, 3 or 4 weeks of each other?
I think so, yeah.
So without burying the lead, we all went to Osaka and the Osaka World's Fair, to be specific. What drew you to going to visit the Osaka World's Fair?
My wife and I, we really wanted to go to the Dubai Expo in 2020. They got postponed till 2021, and we couldn't make the dates work to get there, and really, really regretted it because we heard great things about the Dubai Expo. And we said, no matter what, you know, we're going to go to the Osaka Expo because just the idea of it really just appeals to me, you know, getting to see all these little glimpses into most, if not all, countries around the world, all in one place, just in this compact area. Yeah, it sounded like a really cool experience and wanted to make sure that we checked it out this time.
So I want to get into some of the details, but I just have to ask, just the way that you built it up for yourself, did it meet your expectations?
Yes and no, I would say. I would say the architecture was stunning. The ring that surrounds the expo is incredible. I heard it's the world's largest wooden structure. You know, all of the architecture of the country pavilions themselves, it was beautiful. Not to spoil anything, but the lines were pretty rough. The crowd flow was pretty difficult, I would say. So I would say in some ways it surpassed expectations. Other ways it was a little disappointing, but overall glad we went.
I have to echo you on the lines. I guess it's a grand success if you look at the number of attendees, I guess. But like you said, the amount of, and it's not for them lacking, you know, they're definitely invested a lot in crowd control and trying to design the place in such a way. But the reality is that there is just such a crush of attendees.
Yeah, I agree.
Just an insane sea of humanity.
I wanted to interject for a second. You know, I did a little bit of on-the-fly producing because Trevor seems to just interchangeably go between World's Fair and Expo. And I was just double-checking, and you can't actually do that, although apparently World's Fair is a very like U.S.-centric thing, and most of the world calls them expos. So, interestingly. At least that's what Google says.
I'm so glad you said that, because I have been using them interchangeably, and I feel like I've seen them interchangeable, like in some of the research I was doing leading up to it, but I appreciate it.
Although most of the branding for the Osaka one seems to be Expo 2025. That seems to be the way that they're advertising it and kind of putting up billboards and signs and things like that on planes and other places.
Yeah, and they had signage everywhere, which was great, almost surprisingly as far as trying to get there. So I'll just offer one additional thought before we start diving into things. I was so much more reminded of Disney World and sort of the level of expertise or future planning that you needed to put in to be able to get more than like 2 or 3 rides at Disney World. That was what it felt like was the case here for the expo. If you weren't planning months out and getting your reservations for the pavilions, then you were maybe getting into a couple, or you were just out of luck, period. I mean, there were so many pavilions when we were walking around. that said, if you don't have a reservation, don't even bother trying.
Right. Yeah. You know, going in without a plan is, like you said, it's just like going to Disney at the peak of summer, you know, right when they're opening a new ride or something, just crowds everywhere. I mean, many of the pavilions had 2-3 hour lines. I mean, gosh, it was an hour to get into the gift shop. I mean, there were just lines everywhere. And yeah, like you said, with the reservation system, the pavilions, I mean, we did a good bit of research before this trip, and it was still confusing trying to get reservations for things. Unfortunately, we had to switch the dates of our trip to the expo around. We were originally going in July, so that would have allowed us to access the 2 month prior reservation. So they have reservations 2 months before the date of your arrival, and then I want to say a week before, and then you can also get reservations kind of the day of, similar to a fast pass at Disney. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get the 2 month prior. We were able to get a few of the 1 week prior reservations. But yeah, without those, it's very difficult to get into at least the most popular pavilions.
And just for our listeners, the complexity of the tickets, I didn't fully understand it when I bought tickets, right? So you have to buy tickets for either the East Gate or the West Gate. Those are the two entrances that you enter at. If you do one of those gates, you can take the Metro. There's an additional fee. Like if you get a day pass, you have to pay additional to take that last bit because it's kind of a far distance. If you take the other gate, you have to pre-book and pre-reserve a shuttle. Now, these tickets that you get at the different gates, you have to reserve a time too. Now, you might be able to switch them out. We were successful in switching 11 o'clock arrival into 10 a.m. arrival on the day of. But it's not simple. They didn't really clearly convey a lot of that. There's a little shuttle, an e-bus that goes around the facility, and they charge for that too. And so it felt like there were a lot of additional fees that, you know, we probably would have been happy to have paid if we knew them in advance, but we ended up having to pivot and you just sort of roll with the punches. It just, it created for a much more frictioned experience, at least for us. Did you encounter that in your research and in your day of arrival?
Yeah, I agree. With the ticketing, just a very, very complicated, it seemed like unnecessarily complicated system for the ticketing. And like I said, we had originally reserved tickets for July. And then thankfully you are able to change the date or change the time, like you said, but you're only able to do that 3 times. And after that, it kind of locks the ticket from what I understand. But yeah, the complexity of the ticketing, and then I would say the pavilions as well. I think the signage could have used a little help. It wasn't always clear which pavilions maybe had a cafe or which of the queues was for the cafe or for the actual entrance to the pavilion. You know, several times, you know, we would try to enter a pavilion and realize that we're in line for the cafe or vice versa. Or some pavilions, you have to actually enter the pavilion, go through the pavilion in order to get to the cafe. Things like that that weren't standardized, I'd say kind of it created some friction, like you said.
Yeah, I'm kind of hard-pressed to understand who'd really take advantage of the West Gate. I feel like most guests probably the East Gate, which has access to the Metro, was going to be the more obvious choice. We ended up getting the West Gate and didn't realize until later about needing the shuttle reservation. So we ended up taking a taxi for the last leg, which, you know, ended up being nice and comfortable, but obviously an extra cost, a substantial cost compared to a Metro ride or a public transit option. I think the West Gate seemed to make a lot more sense if you're like a school group or if you've got, you know, some other kind of way in, or maybe if you're taking one of the shuttle buses from either the train station or the airport. But for the majority of guests, probably I think it's the East Gate that, am I correct, Trevor? The East Gate is the one that was the one that was the one for the Metro?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. I think that was correct. Yeah. But my recollection was that I chose the shuttle side because they said that the lines were only about 10, 15 minutes versus 30 to 60 minutes. Because obviously, you know, the Metro is just dropping people after people after people. And I guess if there's a little bit of a barrier to get there, that it makes it a little bit more streamlined. And I think we did get in that about 10 minutes. We were in probably before 10:15. for a 10 a.m. entry.
I think that's fair, yeah.
As I recall.
That's not bad at all. I think the first day we got there right at, I think we had a 9 a.m. entry. We got there right at 9 a.m. I think we got through the gate about 9:30. So there was a little wait to get in. But then after that, so we went for 3 days in total, but really we kind of did 3 half days, you know, just with the baby, and he would get tired in the evening, so we would head back. And then
I echo the half day. I mean, I think you have to have some real endurance if you're going to be there for a full day, especially in the heat of summer.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is like Disney, I would say.
So we haven't talked about this other part yet. We'll have a future episode, but prior to doing this, we did the Formula One in Montreal. And so we had probably walked by this point in our trip, I don't know, 20, 30 miles. And then we did the expo. It was actually funny because I don't often get blisters, and I had blisters by the time we were at that half day mark at the expo. And I was like, we didn't need a kid for us to say, okay, now it's time to just,
I was expiring. It was time for my nap.
Yeah, exactly. So you had 3 days there. What expos did you get into? What was your favorite? What might have been underwhelming? And any cool tricks or insights?
Yeah, you know, we wound up, I just counted up, I think we wound up making it to 16 of the country pavilions in total. And that's out of maybe 50 or so of the country pavilions. And then there's also like expo hall type buildings that they're called the commons, and they have kind of like a convention type setup with countries that may not have wanted to do an entire pavilion. They kind of have their booth there. So we visited some of those as well. I think my favorite pavilion, it's hard to narrow down, but I would say my favorite pavilion was maybe Saudi Arabia. I don't know if you guys got into that one.
It was on our list. I don't even know that we walked by it. I mean, the whole compound is just so massive. We were looking for it, but I don't even think we got to see it. It looked amazing on online. Can you tell us some more?
Yeah, it was absolutely beautiful. One of the largest pavilions. And unlike most of the pavilions where they're a singular building, Saudi Arabia was multiple buildings. It almost looked like you were walking through a Middle Eastern bazaar. You know, there were buildings and kind of alleyways, and you would weave your way through the buildings. And there were just really impressive displays about what Saudi Arabia has coming in the future. And they're actually going to be the next ones to host the expo in 2030. So I think they put a kind of a little extra into their pavilion. And they had a lot of really interesting information about kind of the tourist infrastructure that they're building. So I know Saudi Arabia is really just kind of trying to become, you know, the next UAE with opening up to tourists and, you know, putting a lot of effort into resorts and, you know, attractions for tourism. So it was pretty cool to see.
Well, and not only that, gosh, with 2030 for that expo, I mean, they're also trying to take a little bit of the Maldives out as well in the building of their Shibara resort on the Red Sea.
Yeah, that looks incredible.
It feels like there's a lot that's going to be converging on Saudi Arabia as we get through the rest of this decade. That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia article. They're saying they've allotted 600 hectares. So it's approximately 4 times the landmass of the Osaka Expo in Riyadh in 2030. So something to look forward to.
Pack your walking shoes for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I thought the Osaka Expo was huge.
Although looking at the past, looking at the expo that you missed, the one in the UAE, that was approximately 438 hectares in terms of space. So about two and a little, almost 3 times bigger than what the Osaka Expo is. But, you know, you have to say, I'm sure Osaka has optimized as best they can with the land that they have available.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they have a ton of land. I wonder if they even had to do any land reclamation because they were right on that water. I mean, you could see it's the Japanese Coast Guard just floating about. They had a cutter and a couple of smaller ships when we were there, making sure the ferries were fine.
It was nice getting a breeze from the water. It was nice at least that the wind was blowing. It helped with some of the rather warm weather that was presented in June for us in Osaka. But at the same time, it was still pretty damn hot out there.
Yeah, you probably dodged a bullet of that July date by going earlier, Brennan.
We were saying that the entire trip. I mean, we were there in May and it was warm. It was very warm. You can tell why most of the Japanese bring umbrellas with them. We were missing out. They were prepared for bringing shade with them wherever they go.
Oh, yeah. I felt like I needed safety goggles, just being a tall guy. So you went to the Saudi Arabia pavilion. Any other highlighted pavilions you want to talk about?
Australia was very impressive. It was interesting. Some of the pavilions lean more towards lots of information and displays and kind of education. Australia kind of leaned into just being a beautiful, kind of laid back pavilion. It really matched Australia as a country, kind of the vibe. They had a beautiful walkthrough exhibit that was kind of like you're walking through the bush in Australia, kind of an outback with trees and animals. And it was great for the baby to look at and check out all the animals and trees and bushes and stuff. That was cool.
Cool. So let's pull that thread a little bit more for the baby. Tom and I had the experience of just, you know, adults kind of wandering around. How was it having a child? Did it build more excitement for you and your wife? Or did you feel like it was too soon? Did you feel like it was just right?
I think it was just right. We're learning, you know, how to travel with a baby. And you certainly can't go from, you know, all day, and you can't do as much as you can, you know, without kids. But I mean, really just seeing things through his eyes and, you know, what he pays attention to as a 1-year-old is really, really rewarding. And I have to say, Japan in general is very kid friendly, very accessible. You know, I really didn't think about elevators before having a kid in a stroller. So we'd always opt for stairs or an escalator, but you really do appreciate elevators in every train station, that sort of thing. Japan, compared to a lot of other places, is relatively very easy with a baby. And the expo in general, perhaps, like, if I could give one hack for the expo, is bring a baby in a stroller, because I would say at least half of the pavilions had a dedicated wheelchairs and strollers line. And I would say a good dozen pavilions we got to visit that otherwise we would have just skipped, because the lines were 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours long. And instead we got to jump straight to the front of the line, which was pretty cool.
So that hack probably got you almost half of your pavilions, if not more than half.
Yeah, definitely. That was very nice. And I'd say the other big tip would be go in the evenings. It's cooler. And for whatever reason, it tended to clear out right around 5 or 6 o'clock. I don't know if you guys experienced the same thing.
We didn't make it that far. I think we left like, what, 1 or 2 o'clock? I think we put 4 or 5 hours in and we were tired, we were hungry, we were sore, and we just sort of, and hot and overheated, and we just sort of said, okay, this feels like enough.
I hear you. We actually, one of the days, we started in the morning, went until about 1, 2 o'clock, took the metro back to the hotel, had a nap for a while, had a snack, and then headed back into the expo around 5 or 6, and then had a really nice evening in the expo. And it really tends to clear out. Some of the pavilions that previously were reservation only, they wind up opening them up in the evenings when there's less demand. So that was nice.
Yeah, we did have a couple of pavilions tell us that we should circle back after 4 or something like that. So any food options that you guys really liked? I had read varying reviews of the quality of the food there, as well as the Dubai Expo. So I'm curious, did you have any meals there?
We did. We tried to have lunch or kind of a light dinner there each day. And I would say the food was okay. I would compare it to maybe like Epcot, really. You know, it's the food at the countries at Epcot. It's decent. It's not the best quality, or maybe not the best indication of a country's cuisine. But yeah, I thought it was decent. A little on the expensive side, the food in the expo itself. But I would definitely, we had some food in the country pavilions themselves. Like each country has its little cafe with maybe 3 or 4 food choices, a couple of drink choices from the country. And then there's also more general food court areas within the expo. that food, we didn't have any good food from the food court areas. It was really mall food court type food. Wasn't anything to write home about. There's also it's either a 7-Eleven or a Lawson's convenience store in the expo itself. And that was all very reasonably priced, had all the staples that you'll find in a Japanese convenience store. So lots of great stuff. Funny side note, this was early on in our time in Japan, and we went to the convenience store there in the expo, trying to find something for the baby, just like a quick snack, and made a beeline for the baby food pouches, you know, like the little applesauce or mashed up fruits and vegetable pouches. Quickly grabbed the first one we saw and fed it to the baby, and he loved it. It was great. And only a couple of days later, we were in a different convenience store, started looking closely at the pouches again, and realized the section that we got the baby food from was also all the other pouches around those said energy or caffeine. And we found out that we inadvertently gave the baby an energy pouch. So you got to be careful. There are two different sections, and those pouches all sort of look similar.
Yeah, it was interesting. As we were kind of wandering around, we saw a lot of people enjoying those pouches, whether they were energy or otherwise. We couldn't really tell, but I felt like it was like every 10th person or 10th group had a bunch of these pouches that they were taking a quick break, pulling them out of the cooler and everything. But it's funny that you mentioned the 7-Eleven, because Tom made a beeline. We went into the Oman Pavilion, and then afterwards he made a beeline for the 7-Eleven. And as we're waiting in line, yes, there was a line to get into the 7-Eleven, which was kind of funny in its own right. And they put up a map, and they're explaining the map of the 7-Eleven. So like when people get in there, they know exactly where they're going. I was just really impressed with the planning and the clarity and just the thoughtfulness of how they sort of coordinated all of that.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Yeah, it was kind of like a one-way flow. Like you needed to go in the one direction of traffic, and there's no backtracking.
If you miss something, you got to go get back in line again.
That's right. Get what you need and then get out is, and they were clearly trying to make sure people to do some crowd control in there. And it was needed because it must have been, I can't even imagine what the volume of that 7-Eleven must be, because there's so many people in there. All I did was get a Coke Zero and get out of there. And it was quick. I went in, grabbed my ice cold Coke Zero, and I was very happy to have my carbonated beverage and caffeine fix after that. But it was nice and quick. Yeah, it was nice.
Whereas I followed, and I almost got pulled in under the undertow, and I almost I almost drowned under the wave.
You clearly hadn't studied the floor plan there. Yeah. Well, you know, there are people who wanted food and other things, and there were microwaves. There were places to get, you know, hot water for your ramen. You know, there were lots of different places where people needed to be, but I just needed a drink, so I grabbed one. And I think my total in time in that 7-Eleven was probably like 1 to 2 minutes.
The only other thing I'll say on drinks, just because we're here, near the vending machines, they had water bottle refill stations, which I thought was really, really nice. It was cold and just, you know, exactly what you needed. I think we leveraged that like probably 3 or 4 times while we were there, just in the short amount of time we were there. And you know, you don't always see that. Maybe you do now, and I just don't go to these types of places. But I felt like that was a nice touch. And every one of them had like a decent line. So a lot of people were taking advantage of that.
Yeah, those were very nice. Kind of all scattered throughout the expo. It's very convenient.
So favorite dinner that you had at the expo, or favorite lunch or dinner?
We had dinner at the Poland Pavilion, and that was excellent.
Ah.
It was one of the few pavilion. Most are counter service, grab and go type thing. And then you'll find a picnic table or a bench or something. The Poland was actually a sit down restaurant. It was a set menu. You get to choose the appetizer and the dessert. It was a set menu, but very good food. And then Canada was great as well. Had some poutine. They had really good craft beer at the Canada Pavilion. Yeah, both of those were great.
You can't go wrong with either of those. Although having just came from Canada, literally like just prior to that, to our arrival into Japan, I think we had already done it on the poutine. But we did look at the Poland Pavilion, and while it was tempting, it was the heat of the day, and I was like, yeah, that feels like a little heavy you know, too heavy food for for 85 that's degrees. True. No, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. Any other thoughts or observations you want to share before we move away from the expo and into some other Osaka thoughts?
Yeah, the only other thing would be if someone's looking to go, I would say unless there's something specific you're looking for as far as a souvenir, something that you know you want to get, save the shopping for before or after the expo. All around Japan, we saw after we went to the expo and stood in line for the merchandise for an hour, we saw lots of department stores, train stations, kind of scattered all over. There were little corners carved out for expo merch. So you could buy t-shirts, you could buy maps, you could buy the little passport stamp books. So my wife got a stamp book and we got stamps from each of the countries that we went to at the expo. But all that stuff you can pick up outside of the expo and not waste your time waiting in line there.
And that's a great tip. We saw a bunch of that as well. And we saw how bad those lines were at the different stores. Definitely the one by the gate that we entered was already very busy at 10 o'clock in the morning. So that's absolutely a great tip. So let's shift to Osaka highlights. How much time did you spend in Osaka? I know that you said you went to the expo for 3 days. Did you spend a little bit more time in Osaka itself?
We did. We spent a little bit more time there. Honestly, after 3 days at the expo, we were ready for just some downtime. So we didn't do a whole lot more in Osaka. We did check out the Osaka Castle and the gardens and the park around the castle, which is beautiful. And actually found a great kids' play area near the castle there. It was a play area for maybe like 1 to 5 year olds. They had ball pits and slides and just all kinds of nice areas for the baby just to be able to run around and play a little bit after being stuck in the stroller for a few days. So that was great.
I feel like finding those is always the best part when we kind of just happen upon those types of play areas. I mean, obviously with a toddler, we've got a little bit more of pressure for that, but those are so cool. And I think I had shared that Google Maps list of play yards, playgrounds with you.
Yeah, that's a great, great list and really invaluable. It's you know, when we get to a new place, I'll check that list and see if there's any restaurants or play areas on there that we could check out.
And it's been great. The community has really added to it. We've really started to see a lot more there. And I think it's just so cool because I think that really can be the difference for an experience, right? You obviously want to walk around the city. You want to do a lot of touring, but you really need to give the kids the time to run around and just explore and get their energy out.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that kind of connects you to an area. You know, it's great when your kid's able to make friends with somebody local and kind of run around for a little bit. And then you know, it really just feels like kind of a local experience. It's a lot of fun.
So true. So true. We were in Acquaterme, which is probably about an hour from Genoa, Italy. And our daughter's playing on the playground. And this Italian boy is walks over and he's like, no, the slide is clean. You can come. And he gently grabs her hand and kind of walks her to the slide. It was just the cutest thing.
Yeah.
The smile of our daughter as she's being led, she's just like beaming. She's like, oh, I made a new friend.
That's so important. That's the main thing that we want to do for our son is let him experience so many, like as many different cultures and experiences and, you know, make sure that he's comfortable in all these situations, whether it's flying on a plane or, you know, meeting new friends at a playground or just be comfortable in these situations and let him experience this stuff.
Awesome. Okay. So, Tom, did you want to jump in?
Yeah. I was just curious, other than Osaka, did you visit any other sites in Japan or was that kind of the main area that you visited?
Oh, we did. After Osaka, we took the bullet train up to Tokyo and had a couple of days at Tokyo Disney.
Oh, okay.
And then had some time in Tokyo itself.
Great. Yeah, I mean, this was my first time actually visiting Osaka. I'd kind of been around the area, like I'd stayed in Kobe once and also visited Kyoto, but this is my first time actually visiting the city of Osaka. And it's very interesting. It's a busy city, but I never felt quite the same crush as you do in Tokyo. You know, it's not like, you know, you would go into a shopping area or you go in the midday somewhere in Osaka and there'd be plenty of people, but you wouldn't quite feel the crush of people as you would maybe in Tokyo. I mean, the metro stations were busy and there were lots of people walking around, but you actually did have at least some space to avoid people. And you probably wouldn't get that luxury in Tokyo, at least from what I recall.
I agree. Yeah. I would definitely say Osaka feels very much like a second city, you know, kind of a Chicago of Japan, I would say. And yeah, I really enjoyed the majority of the time we spent at the expo, but the rest of the time I really enjoyed as well. Went to the Time Out Market there in Osaka. That was a really, really great food hall. A lot of interesting food. We found that with the baby, food halls are really our sweet spot for dining. It's not easy to take the baby to a full sit-down restaurant and, you know, it's a little more casual in a food hall and you can kind of leave whenever you're ready to go. There's no waiting on a bill or anything like that. And the variety is also good. So I might get one thing, my wife will get a different thing, we'll get something else for the baby. So those are really great.
I love that you pivoted that to food, because that was one thing that we did dedicate the majority, I think, of our time there toward doing teppanyaki with the A5 Wagyu. And there was another type that I always forget the name, where you actually do the cooking yourself. And I was just overwhelmed with the quality of the food in Osaka. It was just so top notch.
Yeah, everything we had was delicious. And that's coming from, neither my wife and I are really that big on Japanese food, but we really, really loved everything we had.
Yeah, strangely enough, Japanese is not usually high on my list of cuisines that I gravitate toward, but really did enjoy everything I had in the country. And I would kind of echo your comments about the food halls. I felt like, for instance, we went to that teppanyaki place. It was kind of like counter-style seating. So I don't know that it would be very conducive to a toddler in a stroller. So, you know, or whatever kind of configuration you need for your family. So, and I imagine there's a lot of these kind of smaller mom and pop eating establishments where they're not necessarily going to be easily accommodating for all size families.
I will say though, everywhere we went, everybody was so hospitable, so accommodating. You know, there wasn't any sort of pretension or, you know, sometimes you can sense a little judgment, like, why are you bringing your kid here? You know, what are you doing? Everybody was just so friendly, so hospitable, and really just made you feel at home. Any customer service interaction at the hotels we stayed at the restaurants we went to, everything, everybody went out of their way.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I think that city and the culture there seems very accommodating toward visitors. You know, we really didn't know too many words of Japanese between the two of us. And, you know, we walked into, you know, the one restaurant, the Yakiniku restaurant, which is the one that Trevor was mentioning, where you cook your own food. And everything, you know, on the outside didn't have a lick of English anywhere, which I at first was like, I wonder if I made a mistake here. But immediately we were presented with an English menu, and actually the proprietor and the staff there were actually pretty good at English, which was amazing considering it clearly wasn't, you know, like they were advertising it or I guess necessarily marketing to me, at least from what I could tell just walking by the place that we went to.
Yeah, they were just chilling out. Like nobody was in there at the time we walked up. It was after, it was probably what, 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, 2 o'clock. It was after like main lunchtime, you know. So we were kind of at an off hour,
and they were just sort of chilling. And I guess they were all crazy, or they said that they were crazy. And so I think their restaurant name had something crazy about it.
Yeah, we didn't have an English name, right? It was 100% Japanese, and I forgot if we actually translated it or not. But they were cool guys.
Total hole in the wall, and it was just really, really good. A little weird though, because we sit down and we're like, okay, you know, we want beef. And so I think we placed our order, and then they come out with like a salad, and we're like, okay, that makes sense. And then like some peas of some sort, right? Like snap peas.
Well, the edamame, you know, the soybeans.
Edamame. And then they come out with this full like snapper. Like, you know, it's still got the skin on it. And they're like, you put this on grill. And I'm looking at it like you're not putting none of this grill. Oh, the fun of it.
Yeah, that is the fun part. Just never knowing what you might get. That's a lot of fun.
Trevor does not partake in seafood. So yeah, we weren't having any of that. But I think after that initial faux pas, I think we were fine. And actually, yeah, that was interesting. It was also, you know, we ordered by QR code and stuff came out. So I don't know if that's normal for restaurants nowadays, but that was our experience. And this was either going to be really good or really bad. And it turned out to be really good, which was, I think, just what we needed that day.
Which was actually kind of a complete opposite of our teppanyaki experience, where everything was just, you know, verbal or showing a picture. And we did encounter a little bit of a lost in translation, but it was almost a happy accident.
Yeah.
We both ordered a sparkling water and they brought two sparkling wines and we're like...
I mean, it made Trevor really happy. I think it was probably like, oh, this is great. This is it was a happy accident.
It took us a little bit more to finally figure out that they call it carbonated water.
Yeah, like we kept saying sparkling, and it was translating like spark, and I'm like, what? No, not spark. And then yeah, finally, did you mean carbonated water? And I'm like, yes, that is exactly what I would like.
Any final thoughts on Osaka?
No, I think that pretty much covers it for Osaka.
Which airport did you fly? Or did you fly into Osaka? Or how did you get to Osaka?
Oh, so interestingly, we started the trip in Europe. So we had some time in Vienna, spent about a week in Vienna, and then we flew Finnair on their only route to Japan, from what I understand. And it is Helsinki to Nagoya.
Helsinki to Nagoya? Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. That's the only long-haul route into Nagoya, from what I understand. So that was an interesting route and really great flight. But yeah, we flew into Nagoya and then took the train from there to Osaka.
Do you think that's because of the Russia airspace issue and that was the farthest they could make? Or is that a longstanding route that they've flown?
I'm not sure. I wonder if there's maybe a connection, like a business connection between Finland and that area of Japan. I'm not sure.
And it appears to be seasonal too, because it looks like it flies June to October. Oh, and then maybe March. And then look, next year it's like March to June. I'm guessing they must be getting some funding from the Nagoya airport. It is an international airport, but as you mentioned, it's probably one of the only major long haul routes that they have stopping there.
Yeah, no complaints with the Nagoya airport. We landed and were through immigration, had our bags in about 15 minutes, I would say. It was just a seamless experience and we're able to jump on the bullet train. We took the train into Nagoya, changed trains and hopped on the Shinkansen over to Osaka.
I will make a comment just because we had the fun experience of actually flying into, because there's a secondary airport in Osaka, the Itami Airport, which is mostly domestic. So we actually flew in there, and then we flew out of a Kansai International, KIX. So, you know, KIX and ITM are the two codes for those two airports in Osaka. And, you know, people will often forget that there is a secondary airport in Osaka, that ITM. And I will tell you, we ended up flying in from Tokyo, from Haneda. And the ITM, I think, is absolutely the right airport if you have the option and are staying downtown, because the distance of the airport is much closer and the taxi fare will also indicate that. So in our case, we chose to do taxi because, you know, we had luggage and there were two of us and it was our first stop in Japan. So we were just like, oh, let's not deal with, you know, all the formalities of trying to navigate public transport, you know, as we are delirious coming off of, you know, 15-hour flight, 12-hour flight or whatever. But I think Itami ended up being the right airport to fly into for where we ended up staying downtown, because the taxi fare was probably half or less than half what it would cost to go from Kansai.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like a third even. Where did you stay in Osaka?
Oh, we stayed at the Conrad.
We did too.
Oh, very nice. What did you think?
Oh, pretty nice hotel. I felt like it had a very nice location. The staff were wonderful. I don't think I had any concerns, any issues.
I had an issue, but it was resolved.
Oh, yes, you did.
I got a room, and they were very accommodating. You know, we got there, I think, what, like 11 a.m. in the morning, something like that, you know, before check-in time, obviously. And I was very flexible. I said, hey, just give me what you have available, because, you know, they had upgraded me, but the room wasn't ready. I was like, just give me the room that you have available. And they did that. I will not recommend staying on the 35th floor, I guess, on the sunny side in the afternoons, because that room got super hot. And I did have to talk to them. And I'm like, you know, the first night I was okay. But then after the second night, it got even hotter. I was like, ugh, yeah, I'm going to need a different room. This one is a little too warm for me. And they were very nice about it. They came in, the customer service person actually came to my room and could see that it was uncomfortably warm. And they moved me and upgraded me to an executive king. And that was a much cooler side of the building, fortunately, and almost a little chilly by comparison. But they were able to resolve it really quick. And the first night, I didn't suffer too much. And they gave me a fan, which, you know, helped. You know, I usually have my own, but, you know, they brought in a full-size one, which helped with the situation. But other than that one issue, the Conrad's a great hotel.
Well, at least you know where to ask for if you want the sauna room now.
Yeah.
And they did have a sauna in the spa. I did visit the spa and the pool, and I thought it was very, very good. Very, very nice. Not busy when I was there. I don't know if you made it down to the spa or the pool.
I hit the workout room one day. Didn't make it to the spa itself, but the area, it looked great. Yeah. I mean, I was very impressed with the whole hotel. Breakfast was excellent. Nice buffet. The lounge was great. Had a really nice evening spread. Only complaint, totally understand why they do it, but it wasn't super convenient. No kids in the lounge after 5 p.m.
Yeah.
That was a little tough, but I understand.
I saw that sign. And then what we experienced on Friday, they didn't really enforce it, but they sort of went to shifts. So you get like the first 50 minutes or you get the second 50 minutes of the hour. Then they, like on Friday, they left all the alcohol and the food out even after 8. Like we left at 8:20 and they had left it out even longer. But like I had gotten there early. And so at like 6:45, they're like, so we're wrapping up the first hour, get whatever you want. And like, they didn't say get out, but that was kind of what they were implying, you know, and they're very nice and courteous. And they stated it in the welcome letter that if they were at full capacity, they were going to have to do that. They never kicked us out. In fact, Tom joined me at maybe 20 minutes later. And then I was sort of like, okay, well, you're not going to get anything because the table is going to be used anyway. So I think they just didn't bother us. But I did think that was interesting. They went to this sort of shift structure. So if you're going to the Conrad during a busy time, don't expect to have a full lounge experience. Plan to do the whole get in and get out. And if you can stay longer, great.
You know, they did have the afternoon tea, you know, from 3 to 5 for the kids. So I noticed that that's when kids were allowed. And again, not quite the same service you have at, you know, the happy hour. But, you know, they still had, I think, we noticed they had what, beer out, and they had, you know, of course, tea and scones and finger sandwiches and other desserts and other things out for afternoon tea, you know, between 3 and 5. And that was totally acceptable for kids to be in the lounge for that time period.
And it was also really, really well attended. I think we saw the biggest crowd when we went there during tea time on Friday, like bigger than the crowds we saw in the evening drinks for Wednesday night and Thursday night. So that definitely seems to be a big deal. And we got drinks in the hotel bar because I brought all my business platinums and I wanted to try to get some Hilton credit experience because I don't stay at Hilton very much.
Yeah.
So, you know, I say to this guy, I said, I got another card. Let's go get a drink. He just sort of rolls his eyes at me. But as we're sitting there, every table along the window has this very elegant looking afternoon tea, like triple 3-level tower with the different scones and sandwiches and such. And they have like a nice little box, like a very elaborate box of teas, and, you know, to choose from. They definitely seemed like they made a big deal of it. I didn't look at the costs, obviously, because we could just go up to tea in the lounge, but it definitely seemed like it was a thing. And I don't know that I remember that in my previous trips to Japan. I don't know if that's Osaka specific or if that's a Japanese thing that I guess I just never observed.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's that location too. It's, you know, it's on the 40th floor, has wraparound panoramic views of the city. So I just think it must just be a popular spot, you know, for certain ladies that want to take in a, you know, a full high tea. They're obviously offering it in the bar, and we saw multiple tables of people doing that. So it seemed very popular.
Little things that you notice. So Brendan, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Final thought in general. Japan is very accessible, very easy to navigate with a baby, very easy to find, you know, everything we needed. once we figured out the right pouches to buy, those were very easy, very easy to find. The only thing I would say, and I don't know if this was just us being inexperienced or what, it was difficult to find diapers, I would say. I don't know if maybe cloth diapers are common there. People just don't buy disposable diapers a lot, but it was difficult. Most 7-Elevens did not carry them. We had to go to a drugstore most of the time. And then often they would only have maybe one or two sizes of diaper, you know, like the pull-up style diapers. This is more information than anybody wanted to know. But that was a challenge that we had in terms of traveling with a baby.
That's interesting. Yeah, we always traveled with our diapers, but we always looked around just to sort of figure out, hey, could we have not needed that? And so that's a great observation, because I know a lot of people don't want to travel with, like, you know, 20, 30, 50 diapers. Thank God we're out of that. And don't worry, you're probably not that far off. You know, another year or so, you'll be out of it too. Well, Brennan, thank you so much for coming on. Loved to learn your experience. Glad you had a much better experience at the World's Expo, or Osaka Expo, I should say.
Expo 2025.
I'll use every different term. Sounds like you had a great experience there. We appreciate you sharing that in Osaka, and definitely learning a new flight. Didn't realize that Finnair out to Nagoya. Do you want to share how folks can find you?
Yeah. I'm not very active on social media, but you can find me on Twitter, Mission Media Vid. Or on Instagram, Brennan Anderson 92. Feel free to message me on there. Not real active, but that is where you can find me.
And obviously on the Mileonomics Slack as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We wish you more and more family travel. Hopefully we can have you on to talk more of that family travel as you get further along.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Mileonomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.